Neither his clothes nor the rouge and powder with which his face had been carefully embellished could hide the fact that he was elderly. But if he would disguise his age, the wrinkled Lothario made no attempt to hide the question in his peering, lecherous eyes, or the invitation that twisted his thin, reddened lips. Iona drew herself up to her full height, which was not very high, and in a voice as disdainful as she could make it, she replied in French, "You have made a mistake, monsieur. Permit me to pass." But her gesture of dignity had perhaps been a mistake, for as she threw back her head, the dying light of the afternoon revealed the whiteness of her skin, the surprising colour of her eyes, and the delicate features which had been half hidden by the darkness of her fur-trimmed hood. The rake's smile broadened, and he took a step forward, over-eagerly. He had not been mistaken. Here was loveliness. His sudden movement made Iona shrink away from him. She was not really afraid, for she had moved about Paris alone since she had been a child, and was accustomed to the roués and the vieux marcheurs who thought that any young woman who walked the streets unchaperoned was theirs for the taking. Usually she could deal with them effectively and with little trouble to herself, but this evening she was in a part of Paris she did not know well, and she was uneasily aware that she was inviting unpleasantness by walking alone in such a neighbourhood. But she had no choice in the matter, and now she looked swiftly round her to find the best means of escape. It was not easy to know what to do. The street was very narrow, and in the centre the cobbles sloped to a deep gutter where the water from recent rains strove to flow against the piles of sewage, refuse and rotten vegetables flung out daily by the inhabitants of the tall, dirty houses. It might be possible to cross the gutter, Iona thought, and proceed down the other side of the street, but the cobbles were wet, and it would be easy to slip and fall ignominiously should she try to move swiftly. There was nothing for it, she decided quickly, but to face her persecutor defiantly. She pulled her dark cloak further round her, and then, clearly and in a slightly louder tone so that he should not think her afraid, she said, "I am on business of the utmost importance, monsieur. Be kind enough to stand aside." Perhaps it was her tone, perhaps the haughty carriage of her head, or maybe the look of utter contempt in her eyes, that told the reprobate all too clearly that here was someone he could neither entice nor threaten into obliging him. Almost instinctively he started to move aside, and then perversely changed his mind.
"If you must leave me, most beautiful mademoiselle," he said, "at least allow me to kiss your lips before you go."
His voice was silky, but there was an undercurrent of lust in it which warned Iona of the danger in which she stood. Unwisely, perhaps, but impulsively, she attempted to push past the man who barred her way, and instantly found herself clasped in his arms. She was so slight and slender that he seemed to enfold her, his white hands covered with glittering rings having a surprising strength, and the folds of his velvet cloak swirling around her so that she felt that he both suffocated and overpowered her. She fought against him frantically, and in terror realised that his desire had given him the strength of the youth he had long lost.
"Au secours! Au secours!"
she cried, and then, in her extremity, called in English, "Help! Help!" Already she could feel the hot breath of her captor on her cheek, could see his dark eyes looking down at her as he forced her head back against his shoulder, and then, when she felt almost faint from the horror of it, "Help!" came unexpectedly. Quite suddenly, a dark shadow seemed to blot out the light as she struggled, panted, and cried. One moment she was captive, the next moment she was free. Freed so quickly that she staggered and almost fell. But to her surprise, she saw that he who had held her at his mercy was now at the mercy of another. A tall man, so tall, so broad-shouldered that the old roué seemed but a pygmy in his hands.
"This man is molesting you, mademoiselle?" the newcomer asked.
"Oui, monsieur."
Iona's answer was barely a whisper between her lips, which were quivering. The Frenchman struggled like a rat held beneath the paws of a cat.
"Lâchez-moi, canaille! Lâchez-moi!" he cried.
But he was as impotent and powerless as Iona had been but a few seconds before. He screamed, a scream of rage and terror, as the big man picked him up by the scruff of the neck and the seat of his breeches and flung him into the gutter. There was a splash and a squelch of mud and filth as he